All right, I have never done this before, and I haven't really warmed up, but I think I can do a double turnover.
Do not. At your age, you cannot handle a double turnover.
I think I can. I think I'm totally ready for a double turnover.
You're not stretched enough for it. You do not have the limberness. Dude, the double turnover is something for your youth.
Yeah, but you know what? I feel good. I feel better than I ever have in my life. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do the double turnover.
Don't do it.
Oh, my God, that's so good. Oh, my God, that's delicious. Double turnover. Absolutely. Oh no. I pulled something. Yep. Yeah, I definitely pulled some. Oh God, that hurts.
Yaggity smaggity doo.
This is Junk Food Cinema.
Hi, this is Dick Miller. You're listening to Junk Food Cinema on Film School Rejects. Who are these guys?
Welcome back to Junk Food Cinema, everybody. That is the kind of comedy that you only get from your great Uncle Saul.
High comedy!
High comedy, as in if you were more intoxicated, then you might enjoy it more. This is, of course, Film School Reject's weekly cult and exploitation film cast that is so good, it just has to be fattening. We look at the films that other people have ignored, or that haven't gotten their due, or that have gotten their due for the wrong reasons, or are composed mostly of Mountain Dew. Whatever the case may be, we are here to cover those films. I am your host, Brian Salisbury, and joining me, as always, is my friend and co-host. He's a novelist, he's a screenwriter, he's a lieutenant of Megaforce, he's C. Robert Cargill.
That's me!
That is you. There is no getting around that.
Hi.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm good, thanks.
Oh, yeah.
And we are continuing through our random movies September, as we do. But before we get into that, I want to remind you that you can get our back catalog episodes on iTunes as well as on Stitcher. And while you're on iTunes, if you want to go ahead and leave us a 5-star rating and give us a review, that really helps us. We're moving up the ranks, which is awesome, and we want to thank you guys for that. We'd like to see...
Because that's all your fault, so thank you guys.
Is.
We appreciate all the work you're doing. Those of you who pass the word around, tell your friends at work or on Twitter or on the Facebooks, because we're old now. We have to call it the Facebooks.
The Facebooks.
Spreading the word. Thank you so much for those of you who are doing it. And please, by all means, continue.
Yes, absolutely. You can also follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema, or like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/, you guessed it, Junk Food Cinema.
Oh, yeah.
So for the last couple weeks, we've been talking about some movies that I have wanted to talk about for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
These were not movies that Cargill had any resistance to. But
oh, God, no.
Ones that I definitely picked. So Turnabout being fair play and Turnovers being delicious, I thought, Cargill, for the next 2 weeks, you have the con, Mr. Sulu. So you immediately picked movies that I was like,
Well, exactly. These are the next 2 weeks' movies are movies that I have wanted to talk about for a long time. They've been on my short list for Junk Food Cinema for quite some time. And they're just, you know, when we started getting into the theme months, they never quite fit.
Right.
Roadside Profits, I think I almost squeezed in on something before, and then we ended up calling an audible to squeeze in something else, and since we just did a random movie month, I was like, oh yes, it is time. I'm doing these movies, and we're starting off this week with a movie that I love wholeheartedly, and feel I need to make no excuses for. Stick It.
Every day, I break the law of gravity, and sometimes other laws get broken in the process.
Let's get out of here!
If I was lucky, I would have gotten sentenced to juvie. Instead, I got sent back to the world I thought I'd escaped forever. Welcome to the Vickerman Gymnastics Academy.
I adore this movie.
That's right. We're talking about the 2006 gymnastic comedy, Stick It.
Yes, which it was one of those movies, and I'll get into this in how I found it, because it's one of those movies that every time I've mentioned it to people, I'm like, you need to check this movie out. They're like, really? And I'm like, yes, really.
Yeah.
Like, it's not necessarily for everyone, but it's one of those movies that you're gonna enjoy it at some level. It is a movie that at it, when you look at it, it looks like when you watch the trailer, it looks like your typical Hollywood teen movie.
Sure.
With a slightly better production values. And the one, you know, attraction to it was written and directed by the writer of Bring It On, Jessica Bendiger. And so it's like, oh, well, I like Bring It On. Maybe I'll check that. Or if you're one of those people who is like, oh, I'm not going to watch Bring It On because you're a moron.
Is that what people told you? I'm not going to watch Bring It On because you're a moron?
No. It was me being really judgmental. Oh, okay. I'm rarely judgmental, but...
Hey, Dredd was last week, okay? Let's skip the judgment.
We took our helmets off, finally.
We took our helmets off, finally.
Finally.
Yeah.
But this is one of those movies that I had kind of written off. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd seen the trailer. It was during 2006, which was not a particularly great year. It was not a good time in cinema. There was this weird kind of dead zone between, you know, the hyper-realism and what became called torture porn of and darkness of like 2004, 2005, where even the big budget movies were dark as fuck, where it's like, hey, come and see the kids movie, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
What was the big hit movie? Hotel Rwanda, I believe, was the, it was the big crowd pleaser that year.
There was a lot of movie. It was really dark. And then there was this sudden spate of just kind of like, crap. And this movie just it came at a period of time and had that kind of push that made it feel like that. And I ended up spending a weekend with some friends out in the country, and one of the guy's girlfriends was like, I brought this movie and I'm fucking watching it, and you guys are gonna watch it with me. And we're like, fine, whatever, we'll watch anything once. And it was Stick It. And at the end, this entire room full of dudes were all just like, that movie fucking rocked. And we ended up watching it again later that weekend because we all just dug the hell out of it. And so I've been, you know, evangelizing about this film ever since, because it's one of those films that just people take one look at it and they kind of dismiss it, and they shouldn't, because this movie is really good. And it's really interesting structurally in what Jessica does with it, what she ends up doing with this film. It looks like it's a sports film, and then it becomes something else. And I really dig that about this. But so that's my preamble to why we are talking about this film. Now let's talk about this film, because you had never seen it.
Well, and it's interesting too, because I have a history with this movie without ever having seen it. This movie came out on video when I was in college working at the obligatory video store,
which we did.
Yeah, the
as
sentence,
you do.
Yeah, the penance we must all pay in order to do what
before
we do.
Before you become a filmmaker or a podcaster, you should have done some time at a video store.
Yeah, it's absolutely, it's a sentence that we all serve. And this movie, the trailer for this movie played so much on the damn TVs that I didn't want anything to do with it.
Those trailer tapes were the worst thing in the world.
And it was during a period of time where, like, there were all of these movies, all these teen movies that the title was some sort of imperative, some sort of command. Stick It, Bring It On, Stomp the Yard, Take the Lead, Fuck Your Mom. Whatever the point, whatever the command of the title was.
Grind.
It's like, stop telling me what to do, teen movies.
Oh,
but
grind.
All of that being said, why it is perfect now for me to see this film, why this is the perfect period in my life for me to finally watch Stick It, is that I have an unabashed love for a certain film franchise that started off super weak, very much like Fast and the Furious, and then, you know exactly where I'm going.
I know exactly where you're going.
And then, throughout its sequels, has managed to find an identity as something so over the top that has come full circle and become charming again, and that is, of course, the Step Up franchise.
Oh, yeah, you love Step Up.
I love the Step Up movies
Why haven't we done a Step Up episode yet?
Because Todd Gilchrist basically told me he would murder me if he wasn't involved somehow in that episode, so we'll have to figure that out. That being said,
he's going to be a town for Fantastic Fest.
He will be. He will be. We may have to make this happen. But my point is, I am, like, after falling in love with Mean Girls a few years ago, after around on the Step Up movies, I feel like the spirit of those two things is somehow, the amalgam of the spirit of those two things is somehow what Stick It is. And I think that's what had my heart wide open to it. And while I had never seen it before, and while there were lingering sort of prejudices against it, they were very much mitigated by the fact that I now am a huge fan of the Step Up movies, and Mean Girls is one of my favorite comedies ever. So I think this was the perfect time for me to see this movie.
And it's got Last Days of Young Jeff Bridges.
Before the marbles went,
it's interesting. I swear to God, this is the last movie that he made before death came and touched him on the shoulder. Like, there are certain actors, you know, George Clooney just had this happen to it, where they just stay young and good looking forever. Even as they gray, they have this young vibrance to them. And then death just shows up one day and touches them on the shoulder. And all of a sudden they're old man winner. And yeah. And all of a sudden, you know, just out of the blue, Jeff Bridges became Rooster Cogburn.
Well, you know why? Because the next thing we see him in after Stick It is Iron Man.
Yeah.
So the next movie we see him in after this movie, he's bald, he's got a beard, he's playing the older father figure of Tony Stark.
And then it's Rooster Cogburn.
And then it's Rooster goddamn Cogburn. And then he starts like, I don't know if him and Tom Waits have the same gargling instructor, but I can't understand a fucking word Jeff Bridges says anymore.
If ever there was a job that I didn't want to have on my top 10 list, gargling instructor.
I'm just saying. I think, and my theory is every year.
It sounds like the second worst porn job ever after Fluffer.
After Fluffer, yeah. I think the problem is, my theory is that Jeff Bridges every year is steadily becoming a Hanna-Barbera cartoon character. I think every year he marches closer and closer to being a full-fledged Augie Doggy or whatever Hanna-Barbera character you want to pull down from the canon. But yeah, so this is, it's nice to see him still in his element here, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Well, and he's great in this.
Yeah.
Like he is really genuinely great. So before we, you know, go into the various critiques and talks about it, let's set this up.
Let's do.
So essentially you've got.
Wait, set it up. Is that a movie we haven't talked about yet? Is that a movie of this time?
Nobody's taking that title.
Oh, okay.
Dude.
Set it up.
Dude.
Set it up.
You know what? I need to make a pitch for this later. I need to work up my pitch for Set It Up.
You need to Lock It Down, and then you need to make a movie called Lock It Down.
Which sounds like a sequel to Lock Up.
Oh, my God. The doors that are opening on this podcast, folks.
Oh, my God. Another Stallone in prison movie. That would be awesome.
Like Lock Up was not.
Anyhow, yes, it's become one of those nights,
it
folks.
Has,
it is it is awesome. No, but you know what? I'm just so giddy. I finally get to talk about this.
Go, man, go.
Yeah, no, okay. So this is the setup is really simple, and it's about this young girl who was a gymnastics pro, was at the top of her game, and just walked out of a major tournament, just walked right the fuck out, and then became this whole rebel without a cause. And she, you know, this extreme sports, you know, dicking around with her friends, getting in trouble with the law, and she gets in trouble with the law one too many times. And the judge gives her a choice between going to a military academy, oddly enough, in San Antonio, Texas Military Academy, or going to this gymnastics academy.
Like courts so often do. The ultimatum you're given, military service or gymnastics.
Well, essentially, her dad has talked to them and said, I'll send her to one of these two academies to help straighten her out. She picks military academy. So, of course, the judge goes, all right, gymnastics. And so she goes to Jeff Bridges.
Because choice is an illusion.
Jeff Bridges School of Injuries, and where she is then has to deal with, you know, a classic master student. Storyline.
So many people get injured at this school that I thought for a while that Jeff Bridges was actually playing Derrick Rose, and that is a sports reference that I just realized Cargill would not get. So
I totally sports ball. Yay!
Sports ball.
So now that what we have is, after we've set this up, it becomes the, you know, the master student story. And that's what this is. This is all about this guy who, you know, is an aging gymnastics instructor with his own problems, dealing with this young girl who doesn't want to be there and just will not take shit from anybody.
Yes.
And both of these both of these characters are just really, really strong-willed in all the right ways, that their interactions, they're just, it's sparking.
You gonna hurt yourself?
Probably.
Just don't get blood on the equipment.
And it just works, and it connects. And you're watching these two go back and forth as they slowly build trust with one another in a typical master-student kind of story. But it's a sports movie. And so you get this feeling that what we're doing is we're moving into a sports movie. And she's got a history, and everybody hates her. And she gets to the point where she's like, all right, I'm going to do this. I'm going to go for this. I'm going to, you know, she's offered a chance to get out of the situation she's in, stuck at the school, if she wins the tournament and brings some prestige to the school. And then the movie insidiously ceases to be a sports movie and becomes a movie about rebellion. And the movie isn't about competition. In the third act, when this movie kind of shifts gears, this movie kind of shows its true colors, that the entire movie has been about judgment and rebellion, and how everyone in this film has been misjudged by us and by each other. And then you get to this moment where they all kind of bond together to throw off the chains of oppression of a flawed judgmental system in gymnastics. And then the movie becomes a critique of the gymnastics world. And that's where this movie really kind of becomes something well beyond what you initially imagine this movie set out to. This movie feels like it is. It's like, oh, okay, she goes to school, she wins the tournament, yada, yada. I've seen that movie before. It's like, that's not how this movie goes down at all. By the time this movie shifts gears, you're just like, the fuck is this going? But I'm there and I'm in it. And every time I watch this movie, it gets me. Mm-hmm. And in fact, my wife had seen it when it first came out, and then she sat down and rewatched it with me again. She's like, man, that movie is so good. She's like, I don't know why I didn't remember just how good it was. And so then we ended up turning around and watching it again a few weeks later. She's like, hey, put on Stick It Again. I was like, hell yes, I'm going to put on Stick It Again. And we were thinking about watching it this weekend, but somebody had our copy. So
who?
I don't know who might have
some guy who definitely does not own a copy of Stick It. That is for sure. I want to agree and disagree with you about the ending of this film, but it's not even so much a disagreement as it is. I think because I come from a perspective of being a sports fan and spending so much of my time absorbing information and news about what's going on in the sports world, I think the ending of this movie may be the most direct, socially conscious sports film I have ever seen, without being a documentary. It just ceases to be a romantic sports film.
Yeah.
It ceases to be what it has set itself up to be in terms of, you know, we think we know exactly where this is going because you have the troubled athlete with a lot of talent, a lot of potential, but is squandering it because they are so rebellious. There are things going on in their personal life that they can't reconcile, and it's getting in the way of their potential. And there's this stalwart coach who may seem like a hard ass, but really what they're doing is trying to get the best. That is a formula older than the Super Bowl.
Yes.
Like that is like bargain basement point A to point B sports film screenwriting. However, I'm going to put a pin in that because when it gets to the end, something very different happens that I think is actually not just a critique of gymnastics. But before we get there, I want to talk a little bit about the structure of this movie because you mentioned it. And one of the things I did notice watching the film is that for a very long time, there isn't really an antagonist in this movie.
There are small antagonists.
But not to the extent that...
No, you're absolutely right.
But it surprised me.
Yeah.
Because I kept waiting, because there's a girl in this gymnastics school who is the quote unquote mean girl, you know, the bitch, the one who's working against our heroine, and yet she's not even that mean. You know who she is? She's Lacey Chabert from Mean Girls. She's not Rachel McAdams. She's because she's so dumb on top of being mean that you can't even take her meanness seriously.
No, and it's she's almost like a joke, but she does provide the antagonism in those scenes to make you feel like she's an antagonist.
But the whole time you're uneasy because you're like, really? This is our antagonist?
Well, because what they end up doing is flipping it to where by the end of the movie we love her.
Right.
Like brilliantly. Like it's almost it's that what they do with her in particular here. I love this character so much. And as per usual, I
Vanessa Lynges, I believe, is the name of the actress playing Joanne.
Yeah. What they do is what as I've talked about in the past, my favorite moment in an action movie is when you have two characters who fucking hate each other. They just do not get along. And all of a sudden they're put into a situation where they have a connection. They get that connection with each other. And then all of a sudden they are fucking best bros for the rest of the fucking movie. And that's exactly what happens here, that we have this character that feels like she's set up to be an antagonist, that instead really it's just that antagonistic enough relationship that once we see that bond, we feel it. And then they're bros.
Yeah.
Like they are a team, and how that happens is so cool and just done so well. And has another thing that I absolutely love about this movie and why I've watched it so many times is there's so much subtext with that relationship as well. Like all of these relationships have a lot of subtext. Like that character, on the surface, she seems like she's just this idiot played for laughs. And then you realize that she's actually got as much, if not more, depth than most of the other characters in the movie, mm-hmm. because she's this character that is in desperate search of a father figure and can't find it. And she really wants her coach to be her father figure. And as a result, she lashes out at people and she keeps trying to win his approval. And
well, it's an interesting juxtaposition, too, with Missy Peregrine's character, because her character is given every opportunity for Jeff Bridges to be that father figure.
Yes.
She resisted it at every turn.
Yes.
So when you have a character like Joanne, who literally at certain points in the movie like tries to go in for the hug and doesn't get it.
And, yeah, and he like dodges by and it's just, and at the time, like the first time you watch it, you're like, ha ha, mean girl didn't get a hug from her coach. And the second time you watch it, you're just like, oh, poor thing. Oh, give her some love. Yeah. Just give her some love, father figure. God damn it, Jeff Bridges. Give that girl a hug. All she wants is a dad.
That's all she wants.
It's really well done how all that kind of subtext works. And you realize that that's why she's giving, you know, why she's being antagonistic is, here's this girl getting all the attention who doesn't want it and doesn't deserve it. And she's trying hard every day, killing herself just to get something. And the moment she actually wins his approval at the end of the movie is so fucking touching. And when he gives her that hug, it's so well earned. And it's just like, oh, it's so fucking adorable. I love this.
Totally.
It's all of these pieces work so well together. So I don't disagree with you. You know, I think you're right. But continue on talking about the structure.
And I think it's funny, too, that there's so much, and I this can't be accidental. There's so much emphasis in this movie in his coaching, and Jeff Bridges' coaching, about controlling the moves, about, you know, making sure if you're going to just throw yourself out there and throw out all your tricks, that you're controlling it. Because both his character and Missy Peregrine's character are very, very controlled. They stop just short of being the cliche. In fact, because basically what should happen in a movie like this, what could have made this very, very ordinary, is that Missy Peregrine's character, Haley, could have just been rebellious to be rebellious, just a girl trying to find herself, very, you know, one-dimensional. When you find out why she's actually so rebellious and why she walked out on her teammates during the championship before the movie started, which is the reason they all hate her, it's very powerful.
And we've actually talked about the fact that we're talking about this movie. So let's just go and say it. Yeah. Yeah. Her coach was fucking her mom.
Yeah.
And it's just like,
and it broke her parents' marriage.
Her dad, briefly played by another, junk food cinema favorite, John Grease.
Not enough John Grease in this movie. That is definitely a complaint that I have.
Well,
enough John Grease.
There are very
in this
few
movie.
Movies you can actually say that there is enough John Grease in the movie.
That's true.
Like, I mean, literally all the films that we tend to talk about. About, you know, Real Genius, Running Scared,
Monster Squad.
Monster Squad. These are movies that have John Grease, but not nearly enough John Grease. So it's only fair that there's not enough John Grease here. But you know what? If you're going to have one or two scenes with a father like this, you put someone like John Grease in there.
Absolutely.
Because the way he looks at his daughter, you feel that, especially the second and third time you watch the movie, you get all that, like, John Grease just brings it, and it's all in, you know, played in subtext in these scenes where you get that this guy's broken and he just loves his daughter, and, you know, but also he knows that his daughter's responsible for his marriage breaking up to a certain degree, and that she feels that weight upon her, and he wishes she didn't.
And the balancing act, however, is that the way you could have brought that out is that you could have had Jeff Bridges be a tyrannical character, yeah. which a lot of coaches like. I mean, you could have had him been more like Mick from Rocky. You could have had him been just like...
Or like the Russian from Cutting Edge.
Yes, or the Russians from Rocky IV. You know,
or
just,
the Russians from...
from Firefox.
Like the Russians.
The Russians.
If the character is Russian in a sports film... Like
then it's a Reagan era film, then yes, Russia is the ultimate evil. But my point is, he could have been just a taskmaster. He could have been that character who you really have to wait till the end of the film to see his heart of gold, which would have been so fucking hackneyed and really would have thrown off our heroine's quest to become normal again.
Yeah.
And instead, I don't know if it's just because it's Jeff Bridges or if it is a testament to the writing and the performance, but I like him all the way through this. Even when he's being his hardest on her, you never feel like it's unreasonable.
Oh, no, because when she walks, that's the thing. That's one of the things that works so well about this movie. From minute one, you do not think that Haley's the good guy. Like, yeah. she needs to get her shit together. She is someone who, from the beginning, is kind of a pain in the ass. And when she walks in, he extends the olive branch and is just like, you know, here we are, let's fucking do this. And she just is like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
I'm here because I have to be. I'm not going to do anything you tell me to do. And he just kind of goes with it. Mm-hmm. And he tries to find the way in with her in such a great way. And it's absolutely deliberate. I feel that character needed a Jeff Bridges to really sell it, because you need an actor with the caliber who can give both the hardness and the gentleness at
and
the same time.
And be a little zen at the same time.
And a little zen at the
and
same time.
And there is no more zen actor on the planet than Jeff.
Dude, there's a beverage here.
McConaughey, at his most stoned, is not as zen as Jeff Bridges.
I'm just driving my Lincoln, and I just...
I'm sorry, McConaughey, at his most stoned, doesn't reach the levels of zen that fucking Obadiah Stane has during certain moments in Iron Man, for crying out loud.
There is truth to
when
that.
When they walk away from the press conference, where basically the stock has gone out the window... And he just goes, well, that went well. It's just like, that is Jeff Bridges. That is the zen and the art of being Jeff Bridges right there.
It's and we'll talk about it next week, but it's almost kind of David Carradine in
Roadside
Prophets-esque.
Yeah, absolutely.
In just calmness. But I feel that's very deliberate. Like, that's because every relationship in this movie is important. And that is ultimately, like, even down to, they set up an antagonist at the end of the movie who also false antagonist, because as where you were going, the real antagonists in this movie are the judges.
Is the system. The system. And there is no way for you to know that, because there's so many little mentions throughout, like, oh, this didn't get a perfect score because of that or that, you know, whatever. But you don't really come to believe, even as they're arriving for this national tournament, that that's really the issue. It's not until things are unfolding that you realize that this has really become a problem. And for me, that's where the movie becomes its most authentic in terms of being a sports film, because... You know, as I said, I watch sports all the time, and I follow the news, and I watch sports ball, and I watch things like FIFA, and I watch things like the NCAA thing. Thank you. That are just the most corrupt organizations on the planet.
And like, they make the NCAA look.
No, that's one of the things I mentioned, is the NCAA. they are absolutely just like vile organizations, and they hide behind all of these false doctrines of, oh, we're not for profit, oh, we're here for education, and it's just not true. And the things that they've actually gotten away with, and the harms that they've actually inflicted upon student athletes, or, you know, even professional athletes in the case of FIFA, or third world countries in the case of FIFA.
Yeah.
Like, these are just
slavery. They are responsible, yes, for fucking slavery.
These are despicable organizations, and I did not expect at all for Stick It to become a commentary on the way certain the bureaucracy of certain sports institutions, because you can narrow it down to just gymnastics, but I think this movie is making a much bigger statement about sports bureaucracy in general.
I totally agree. totally agree.
And I think that's what makes this possibly one of the smarter sports films I've ever seen, because it does come out of nowhere, because you think you're watching Bring It On. You think you're watching Mean Girls. You think you're watching something so standard, and then out of nowhere, like, this movie whips, you know, just, and I know this is a movie full of females, but I'm just using this phrase, you know, I'm just using this phrase.
All right, crash and burn, my friend, crash and burn.
Whipping your dick out. This movie whips its dick out. Whips its ovaries out and says, no, we're actually a very subversive commentary on the way institutionalized sports are run. And some of the, and even though they're focusing on a sport as niche as gymnastics, that statement is just as palpable for the big boys as well. And I think that's the most subversive thing about it.
Yeah. No, and this is that right there is why I have such a profound love for this movie. Why this movie has, forgive the phrase, stuck with me for so long. Yeah. Look, it wasn't intentional. It was coming out, but I realized it was coming out. I'm sorry. I apologize that I took Brian's role and his joke from later in the show that he's already had.
I don't know what you're talking
about.
Deleting
the note. Because it really stuck the landing.
Hey-o.
Because this movie has so much going on. And the thing I love about it is not only is it that commentary, but at the same time, it's a commentary on judgment and how we how judgmental we are, and the script very deliberately forces us to judge these characters in the first act. All of these characters we meet in the first act, we have very different impressions of, and we have a very different impression of this movie. This movie is constantly surprising us with who our characters really are and what the movie's really about, and it's tricking us and forcing us to judge it. Right down from the beginning, we judge it, from the trailer, from the title, from the content. You know, we're judging this movie all the way through, and then this movie kind of turns it back on us and is all about judgment.
And I think there's also, in terms of judgment, in terms of turning judgment on its ear, the sexist angle as well, because I will say, up until the end of the movie, I was getting a little bit, it may be slightly uncomfortable how much this movie seemed to be a little bit leery of its gymnast. Like, there was a lot of ass shots. There was a lot of just like, oh, she's slowly getting in and out of this bathtub. And it's just like, okay, you know, she's beautiful, but like, it just seemed a little leery. And then I realized that when you get to the end of this movie and they're making that statement about judgment, it's like, oh, you kind of pulled this brilliant entrapment move on male audiences, inviting them to leer, making it look like you're pandering, and then hitting them out of nowhere with the statement like, judgment, kind of a bitch, right? And yeah, it's like, oh, wow, that's actually kind of brilliant. I will give you credit for that.
No, it's really sharp. And one of the other things it does that I absolutely love that's super smart is its portrayal of teenagers. Mm-hmm. It's got one of the most realistic portrayals of teenagers I've seen in a film like this. You know, there's these scenes where they're driving around and they're telling terrible jokes, and the type of jokes that when you're 15 years old, you told to your friends and are funny as fuck.
And when you're 30 years old, you only tell on podcasts.
You only tell on podcasts. And then once you hit 40, you kind of roll your eyes at the 30-year-old podcasters. And you're like, youngins, dick jokes aren't funny anymore.
I got 10 more years, bitches.
Did you really say whip out the ovaries?
You know what?
Come on, it's not 2005 anymore, son.
It's not called gymnastics, Cargill.
It's not called gymnastics. But no, it really does. It kind of nails the kids in a really interesting way, where there's points where you're kind of annoyed by the kids and you're like, yeah, but they're acting like kids. Like, yeah, of course they're running around a mall goofing around, because that's what you do when you're that age. And it really kind of, it really kind of nails that in such a great way. And there's no part about this movie that I feel fails at doing what it's attempting to do. Mm-hmm. Like, nothing. Like, there's no moment in the movie where I'm like, well, it could have done this better, or it, you know, the writing could have been sharper here, or this character could have been more defined. It's like, this movie is everything it sets out to be.
And I think even some of the, like, over the top silly dialogue, like the things you would see in Bring It On, like the things that actually kind of defined Bring It On, like a lot of what people remember.
Keep in mind, this is the same writer.
No, I know that.
Yeah,
but what I'm saying is, even in those moments, like even the whole, like, it's not called gymnastics, and when Joanne is being kind of comically stupid, I don't know. I think that there's this idea that if you don't take yourself too seriously, then the audience is going to be more inclined to forgive the fact that they're watching a movie about gymnastics. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, if they are not, I mean, they're taking it seriously in terms of wanting to win, but the tone of the movie, having that sort of taking the edge off by being a little silly at points, I think is another thing that entices the audience in to buy into this world. And then when you hit them at the end with your very socially conscious message that even at by the end of it, they may not be sure that they just saw. I think that's like the kind of the thing with Mean Girls too, is you realize you're watching a movie just about girls being catty with each other, but the way that it's played up and the narration, especially from our main character being so irreverent, I think really helps the audience buy into this world. And I think that's another thing that's very deliberate about this
movie. There's actually a really great small moment. I think it may even be a trailer moment, but it works so wonderfully in the film when it's inviting you in where Haley's friends first show up. Mm-hmm. At the event, and they're watching, and they're like, one of them goes, dude, how did we not know this was a sport?
Yeah.
Like, and then, and it's kind of like, it allowing the audience to not know entirely what's going on and be like, yeah, you're with us, but isn't this fucking cool?
And again,
isn't this kind of, cause you mentioned the leering, but the thing is what I feel like she's really doing with this is she's showing just how fit these girls are and how much work they've put into this and how hard and how much of a real sport this is. And this is what they do. And then you also get to see just what they go through. Like the scenes where like she dips into the tub full of ice because she has to because she's in so much fucking pain.
Yeah.
The movie is not does not glorify gymnastics in so much as it exalts it in with respect.
Yeah. No, I would agree with that. Although I do think that one of the telltale signs that you love this movie is that you mentioned those two friends like three times now. And you haven't even mentioned the fact that one of them is Kellan Lutz, and that this is the first on-screen appearance of Kellan Lutz. So
it is.
Were it not it for is. Sicket, we may never have had to suffer through Kellan Lutz. So that is one thing for which I do not give the movie a lot of credit, because, god damn it, we almost dodged that landmine.
How do you know that we almost dodged it? He wouldn't have continued to go on to make the Kellan Lutz movies that Kellan Lutz went on to make.
Which none of which we can name, because they're Kellan Lutz movies, and we did not see them. But that being said,
why are you going to be like that?
Because Kellan Lutz is awful and should not have had a career
ever. First of all, you're lying, because Kellan Lutz is in the Twilight movies.
Yeah, I know.
So you said, which we haven't seen. You and I have not only watched Twilight movies, we've watched Twilight movies together.
I have seen exactly three Twilight movies.
I have seen all five.
That's great
for you. I've seen some of them more than once.
This is one of those times I'm going to let you have the one-up. You can totally have it, Carco.
No. That wasn't a one-up as much as, look. Look, if you ever want to make fun of Twilight, you have to sit down and embrace it. And you have to own
it. You have to sit down and watch it. I will not say you have to embrace it. Do not embrace Twilight.
Oh, no, dude.
Run
dude,
screaming from
dude,
Twilight.
Breaking Dawn 2? Breaking Dawn
for
2 is kind of genius.
For 5 minutes. And then it's a total blue balls. It's ridiculous. No, I refuse to call that movie brilliant. For 5 minutes, it was watchable.
Who said I didn't say brilliant? I would not have used that word.
For five
minutes.
That is
cruel. That is cruel, sir, to accuse me of saying.
Whatever the adjective you used, it is not that. For 5 minutes, it is watchable. And then that turns out to be a complete jerk-off. And exactly what we expected the movie to be is what it is. All of that being said, we're talking about Stick It. And I will say that one of the things I liked about the movie was how they use visuals to... It's a little music video-y, I will say that, but there's this really cool sequence where they demonstrate how much these girls are practicing by literally layering the shots over each other so you see what looks like hundreds of people on like the
uneven
bars.
And there's some Busby Berkeley elements to that sequence,
yes,
which
absolutely.
Are... And the cinematography in this movie is gorgeous at times. Holy God, are some of those shots just so fucking cool. And that sequence that you talked about that's music video-y, yeah, it is, but it's music video-y in the best way. Like, none of those sequences are like, okay, come on. They're fucking gorgeous.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, and we really haven't talked too much about the exactness of the ending, the precise details of the ending, but basically what happens is the girls get sped up with the fact that the judges are demanding such exacting levels of perfection that it becomes completely untenable. So what they do is they decide, oh, you're going to count that girl off for something as stupid as her bra strap showing? None of the rest of us are even going to compete. She's going to win by default.
And they all scratch.
And it becomes this moment of defiance.
But the tension of that.
Yeah.
The brilliance of it is, are all the girls going to scratch? All of a sudden, you've got all these hyper-competitive girls. And then it's like, are these girls going to go with us and scratch and help us give the award to the girl who really deserved it by pulling off something amazing but getting overly judged? Or are they going to fucking screw us? Yeah. And the way that tension is built is perfect because you just don't know. You're just like when the girls that go with it, you're like cheering. You're like, fuck yeah. And then when it comes to the girls who are the X factors, you're just like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Like, is this going to go? And the end game solution to it is just so good. And it really fucking works.
And it's doubly effective because you realize that the competition, the competitive nature, has also been ingrained in them. It's manufactured as well to keep them at each other's throats. So they're not even in control of that, really. Like, this is something that's been thrust upon them as well. So, yeah, I really like that ending. And I really like the fact that you figure out that the title really refers to sticking it to the system.
Yeah.
And that this is a movie about defiance. And, yeah, I highly recommend... If you haven't given this movie a chance because you were very convinced that you knew exactly what it was going to be and that's not your type of movie, I would argue that this is a movie for both sports fans and non-sports fans alike, but it is a movie that is not at all what you think it's going to be and is entirely impressive for that. Plus, it has a pretty kick-ass soundtrack. So
yes, it does.
You can always
yes,
fall back
it does.
On that.
In fact, a small little bit of trivia: Haley throughout the film wears a bunch of punk rock shirts mm-hmm. and a bunch of rock and roll shirts.
Black Flag.
All of them are actually Jessica Bendiger's shirts from her own closet. She brought in her own shirts because this is the music in this movie is the music that she's madly in love with. And these are the bands that she's in love with. And she patterned Haley a little bit after herself. And so when you go back through and you're watching all these, it's like, oh shit, that's a real Black Flag concert shirt from the concert. That's kind of fucking awesome. Not just props.
Props for them not being props.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is that the thing that's kind of boggled my mind is, as good as this fucking movie is, Jessica hasn't directed another film since. This movie came out 9 years ago?
2006, yeah.
Yeah, and where the hell is... Why the hell has she not been given another film? I have no fucking idea. I know that she's been working as a writer, but she hasn't gotten anything... she doesn't have anything with her name on it, mm-hmm. but she was added to the, she joined the, Academy a few years back. She was ushered in as an official member of the Academy of Motion Pictures, Arts and Sciences, as a screenwriter. And I know she's got to still be working, doing stuff, but the question is what, and why the hell hasn't somebody given her the money to make another fucking movie? Cause God damn it. I want to see another fucking movie from her.
It's not called gymnastics.
So that brings us to the junk food pairing. And Cargill, I believe I'm going to let you take the lead on this one.
You've literally just looked at me and said, I don't have one for this week. You got something? Yeah. And I just... Sticky buns.
Sticky buns, which stick it, obviously, the title of the film. However, there is a scene in this movie, which I'm going to go back to... I'm going to say that it borders on both of our interpretations of this.
Yes.
Because on the one hand, it does show how grueling it is to be a gymnast. On the other hand, there's a lot of shots of spraying like adhesive on girls' asses like constantly over and over and over again to keep their leotards or their
Leos.
Not
in a pornographic way,
but it exists. But it just keeps going and going. It's like, I get it. It's an adhesive so that you don't get wedgies.
Did this really bother? Was this making you feel like guilt?
These are 18-year-old girls. Like, a little bit. Yeah, it was like, I don't know that this is...
We're in Texas. 17 is legal and 18 bugs you?
I'm going to... just go ahead and keep my scruples exactly where they are and not give a shit what Texas thinks.
Hey, why did you have to bring your scruples into this?
I'm just saying. So there's a scene where, in preparation for their big meet, they are spraying an adhesive on their posteriors to keep their leotards from bunching. And yeah, since we already kind of mentioned the turnover in the cold open, we're going to go with sticky buns for stick it. So stick a few in your mouth. Maybe they won't be what you expect. much like this movie certainly is not what you expect.
Dude, I love this movie so much. I'm so happy I finally got to talk about this. A year and a half in, this has been on my list of things I wanted to talk about. So another check mark off my junk food cinema bucket list.
Well, there you go. And guys, thank you so much for joining us. If you would like to hear more of our show, you can obviously find us on iTunes as well as on Stitcher. 5-star ratings, leave reviews. Love to see those. Thank you so much for doing that. Follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. And Cargo, where can people find you online?
You can find me online on Twitter at Massaworm, MassaWyrm. Or on Facebook, facebook.com/Massaworm.
All right. You can find me on Twitter at BryGuySalisbury. You can also find me on Facebook, facebook.com/BryanSalisburyCritic. You can also find me over at oneofus.net, my home away from home. Lots of great geek podcasts and blogs for every taste. So definitely check that out. But I just want to remind you one more time before we go that it's not called Nice Food Cinema. It's not, but
it's
not. Really, it's not called that, but I'm just saying.